Welcome back to Note Bene. We've been called the 4.8 of podcasts.
Wow.
Was that good? No?
It's great.
Do we need to stop and start over?
No, we're good. Did you survive the earthquake? I was a little concerned there.
I knew what it was immediately, but it went on fairly long for a New York City earthquake. It reminded me of my California days. I was in a basement of an East Village tenement building. It didn't feel super secure, I gotta be honest with you.
I was walking the dog, and I think what happened was I was watching this construction crew demo a building like on my block, and I think it happened when I was watching them demo it, and I just thought it was part of the construction. I didn't notice it at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You missed the New York City earthquake, Nate?
I missed it. I was walking the dog. I think I just assumed it was part of the demolition or something, because Lucy texted me and she was like, oh my God, an earthquake. And I was like, no, sweetie, there wasn't any earthquake. Don't worry. And she was like, yeah, there was. I just totally missed it.
Yeah, it was a real one. If I'd been by a subway, I would have just presumed it was a subway going
by. I was outside walking the dog, so I might have just thought it was a subway too.
It was exciting. It was a good day to be on Twitter.
Sure.
I mean, you know, as far as these things go, like, you know, and the only thing more obnoxious than LA earthquake Twitter is definitely New York City earthquake Twitter.
There were some memes. There were some jokes.
No, there's a whole bunch of things. The only takeaway is this, and I have no idea who this person is, but I think this is apropos. We'll move on past earthquake after this, I promise. Quote, if you're wondering why the New York City earthquake is getting more press than earthquakes that happen in California, it's because New York is more important than California, and the things that happen here matter more. Full stop. No notes. No notes.
Yeah, anytime there's an excuse to just remind everyone that LA is a second-tier city compared to this
one. It's not a second-tier city. It's just we're the capital of the world, and right. They're something else.
Yeah. I mean, this is just where, like, things happen on a day-to-day basis on, like, Los Angeles. Not that I don't love LA, as I've mentioned many times in this podcast, but this is the superior city.
Yeah, sure. When you retire, it's a great place to go.
Yes. Seriously.
Anyway, what else has been going on, Nate? We didn't see each other at dinner last night, but I think we both went to the same art opening.
Incredible. Incredible new work by Arthur Jaffa. It is a take on the climactic scene of the movie Taxi Driver, but completely redone in an ingenious way. It's really, you watched it for an hour, which...
I was in that dark room for an hour. I was like tired, but I sat down and I was captivated and disturbed. Mm. The sound of the multiple gunshots continued to ring in my head long after I left the space. I think it was so deeply affecting. He has gone in and replaced all the white characters being shot with characters of color and done it as such in an absolutely seamless way where I was a little confused for a second. I've seen that movie a number of times, but I was like, huh? And then there's no Harvey Keitel. And then obviously, like, he's done something. And it's so seamlessly done to kind of, because originally the script was written where all the pimp characters that are being shot at the end were people of color, most of them. Mm-hmm. And the choice was made in the 70s at a moment of, you know, as now, like, super racial tension. That would be a bad choice and a bad look, so they switched them all to white characters. So Arthur switched them back in this incredible way. Super violent, super dark. I spent an hour in there. I was supposed to go meet you all at some cocktail spot to have sliders that Gavin was speaking very highly of. I didn't want to speak or talk to anyone. Got right in the Uber and got the fuck out of there.
I understand that, but at the same time, it was a very wonderful celebration for AJ. I did eat the aforementioned slider. I was with Gavin when the sliders came over. We were both extremely excited about these sliders. There was also pigs in a blanket.
Oh, if you had mentioned the pigs in the blanket, that might have changed.
That might, I know. That might have pushed it over the edge for you. It was a nice time. It was
at the Temple Bar.
Temple Bar,
yeah.
Which is a wonderful little cocktail spot near my apartment, which is nice.
As I was on my way out, Gavin did track me down to make sure I got a publication that they've published.
I got one as well.
For the show, which has two fantastic essays. I don't have it here in front of me. I left it at home, but a beautifully designed and really two intellectual but very readable short essays that contextualize the work. It was an artistic highlight for me of like the past couple weeks. I was like enthused. I haven't been able to see as much art as I would like. But Gladstone has another fantastic show up that you were mentioning in the group chat today.
The Victor Mon show is insane. It's totally batshit. You have to see it. I don't even want to really go into details about it because it's just one of those painting shows that just like really fucks you up. There's a few pretty cool painting shows up in Chelsea right now, actually. Jamian's show, which you mentioned. Jean Giacomo has a show at the Green Naftali Gallery that I quite enjoyed. What else? Danielle McKinney at the Marion Boesky Gallery.
Yeah, and your friend just opened a new space in Chelsea with a mm-hmm. show of paintings. Morgan Presents, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a great show.
With Sandra Blanc.
Sandra Blanc. She shows up in Chelsea right now.
You know where we're not this week, Nate Freeman? We're not in the basement of the Jewel at that cocktail bar.
No, we're not at the Midnight Rambler in the beloved Jewel Hotel.
Cursed place. Great, great name for a bar, though.
Yeah. God. That fucking bar.
We are not in Dallas for the Dallas Art Fair, but it feels like a fair amount of people did go this year. The previews were actually great, especially from the Dallas Invitational. Is that the name of the kind of offsite fair in the Fairmont Hotel mm-hmm. across the way, organized by our friend James Cope?
So I went last year for the inaugural Dallas Invitational. Had a great time. James does a really good job of activating the local collector base. There's some wonderful home tours and cocktail parties at collectors' homes. This year, there's one at the home of
Marguerite Hoffman.
One of the great collections in the country in a lot of ways.
No, it was chic. No one was posting pictures of the collection, but just the very iconic curving brick wall in the backyard.
Right. Yeah, very cool look. Shulman actually posted a picture of him on the phone making deals at Marguerite's house, which is just
great. What kind of deals was Shulman remain to be seen?
Right. I'm a little bummed to be missing out. Sorry, James, for not making it down because it was so lovely last year. And I think he's really leveled up. There's some major new galleries partaking in the Invitational this year. He got some good press on it.
Yeah, it was a badass selection. I'm sorry I wasn't there to support it. I have a lot of travel coming up, and I couldn't bear, man. Mm-hmm. I got to get down to Dallas more. Love Dallas.
Love Dallas. Always down for a Dallas trip.
My collection down there needs a rehang mm-hmm. in the big office building, but I just, you know, I love the way it looks so much, but we have so much more art that could be included. It's always it's always tricky. You don't want to say goodbye to any friends. But you want to put new friends up.
Is there going to be a restaurant there again? Is there one?
I am not at liberty to say.
Look at that. Okay, something to look forward to.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be something interesting there. It's a great spot. So sorry, Dallas, but you are going to another second-tier city mm-hmm. next week, Chicago.
Sweet home Chicago. Yeah, I am wheels up on Tuesday. Again, very, very excited to be in Chicago. As I've mentioned in the past, the Art Institute of Chicago is closed on Tuesday and Wednesday. But I hit the bat phone. I'm getting a little private tour.
Nice. Yeah, I've run into that problem before. Tuesdays and Wednesdays? I mean, come on. Get your shit together.
Yeah, but like, you know, you can hit the bat phone and you're all set.
Some of us can. Nate can.
Yeah. I'm excited for that. Excited to see the great Nicole Eisenman show at the MCA Chicago. We saw it in London. I think you saw it, right?
Yeah.
The Whitechapel Gallery. Apparently, it's been expanded a little bit, so I'm excited for that. Obviously, Expo. This is the first iteration of Expo since it was bought by our friends, Ari Emanuel and the Freeze community. So we'll see if there's anything different. I know that they've activated their VIP lists to try to get collectors to go from, you know, not just Chicago, but the entire Midwest, as well as New York, Los Angeles, Texas. Whatever.
Maybe a little hard this year with Venice the following week. That's a reason. Among the reasons I'm not going.
This is true. I think you can pull it off if you sort of like fly out that night, which is what I'm doing.
I mean, a lot of collectors I know have day jobs.
This is true. Yeah. So if you're trying to hit it on the weekend and be in Venice, that's a little tricky. Though, there is a direct flight, I believe.
Oh, that's interesting. But I mean, I guess we should really take a pause at this moment since you mentioned Freeze's purchase of the Chicago Art Fair to speak about the fact that in the Endeavor Company, which owns Freeze, has been taken private by their longtime partner and up until now, one of their largest shareholders, Silver Lake Capital, or Silver Lake Partners, whatever it's called. It's a private equity firm.
What do we know about Silver Lake?
I mean, they made a bunch of money taking Dell private and then reselling it within 18 months mm-hmm. at like a fucking 3X or something.
Yeah.
An incredibly well-run private equity firm. You know, mostly known for high tech, but spanning into media. But I was doing some digging to see if any of the main guys over there are like, you know, and the main person that's kind of like runs the firm and has been really close with Ari in this investment into Endeavor was Egan Durban. Really, really fascinating guy. Doesn't seem like he has any art collection from what I've been the research I've been doing. And I'm not sure if anyone there does. So the reason I'm bringing this up and talking about them is I wonder, oftentimes when a private equity firm takes a company private, they are trying to find efficiencies. They're trying to narrow down what the company does, make it more attractive eventually to other investors, and then exit. They're not buy and hold. That's not the way these firms are structured. That's not the way they're compensated. So I'm interested to see if what I would consider a non-core holding of Endeavor, a company that was trying to create a sort of a vertical in the entertainment space, if the art piece, meaning Frieze, is that core to the mission or to driving any profit. I don't think, my best guess is that Frieze doesn't make any money for its parent company. If anything, my guess, there's a red notation or a number in parentheses next to it on the P&L statement. So I wonder if this means that if in the next 18 months, Frieze might be put up on the block.
I guess it's possible, but I would also say that it's such a small part of that entire operation that maybe it's almost marginal. Like, what would they really gain by?
Nothing's marginal when you're trying to maximize what something's worth.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, Silver Lake's been a investor in Endeavor for a number of years.
They invested in Endeavor under the thesis that, opposed to just being talent, you know, agents basically representing artists, that they could be real content makers, mm-hmm. And brokers of content. And the investment in them, the capital that they've infused Ari's Endeavor with, was meant to do that. And that's something that they've done quite well, although the public markets didn't reflect that in terms of the stock price over the past couple of years. So yeah, you could be right. They could understand the vision, but I have my suspicions, and I wonder who would be an attractive investment for, because I do think it's a great brand. I think it's a great luxury lifestyle brand, and I would say the brand equity in having fares in really dope hotspots like LA and Seoul, I think, has raised its profile beyond the core art consumer, but the general population likes to go see fares as well as the collectors. So I think there is a lot of attraction, could be potentially a lot of attraction there for someone that is already in that space, or someone who simply wants a prestige buy to get more into that space. So I think it would be something that could command. And, you know, obviously with the new, you know, what you're really buying with a fair addition to the brand is kind of the real estate, which isn't buildings, but are woods or work in London. And I think that's a tremendous asset as well. So, I mean, time will tell. This is all fucking me making it up in my own head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting to think about.
It definitely is. I don't think that Frieze is on the block imminently. You know, I don't think anyone has to worry about that necessarily. Who would buy it?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. And I'm not sure what the price would be. But, like, everything's available for a price.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, I wonder how much of an emotional, how core to the mission of the brand of Endeavor it would be if there was like a nice number thrown in front of Ari. But maybe maybe it's a no-go.
I mean, I've talked about this quite a bit, and I talked to Ari about this. He's very, very fond of Frieze, even if it's not like one of the core holdings of Endeavor. You know, whenever Frieze gets like a nice press thing, he'll blast it out to every employee, being like, look at Frieze getting some love. He loves the brand, he loves the fares. I think that there was some emotional investment behind his purchase of Expo Chicago, because he's from Chicago and he loves the city so much. His brother, of course, was the mayor. So I don't know if Ari is really keen to see it's, you know, sold, even if, you know, Silver Lake is kind of calling the shots.
More will be revealed. And I think actually the purchase of the purchase price of like is actually doubling down on Ari himself, so they might let him take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
It is a show they believe in his vision for what Endeavor could be if maybe the public markets didn't have the patience to understand that vision.
And I think he got kicked 25 mil in the whole thing. Pretty nice. Maybe that'll go into some more pictures.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like it. And it should be said, I was reading in the financial press, you know, some of the funders for this venture by Silver Lake that infused them with capital included Michael Dell's family office.
Oh, let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those guys buy art. Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. So they definitely have an enthusiastic interest, although the price points at most Frieze are probably below their interest point.
Right, exactly.
Moving on, what else was happening in the world of art? I mean, you know what? Just real quick, and also, I keep bringing this up to people, and it seems, and it just kind of relates to this, is I still think Sotheby's is for sale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, not publicly. Like, it's not like, you know, they're not hanging a shingle out front, but, you know, everything I read about Drahi's holdings, like, they're really in a squeeze in terms of their debt load, and it seems like that would be a great way to try and raise some capital or at least get out of the deal.
Again, who's the buyer there? I mean, like,
same prestige. You know, Sotheby's, I think, has done a great job. I'm not sure if it plays out in their numbers per se, but of really staging themselves as a real luxury marketplace. Mm-hmm. Collectibles, handbags, things like this, and doing a lot of outreach to younger collectors, all kind of the celebrity kind of curated auctions they've done and things like that. I think it's a tremendous brand value, even if buying it with a whole bunch of cheap debt that became expensive debt maybe wasn't a great financial decision in that moment. I think there's a ton of equity there. Dudes love, like, it's almost like, you know, there's only three real auction houses, two and a half, let's be honest. And it's almost like buying an NFL team. Like, it's a right. great
buyer. I think that, you know who I'm thinking.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Is he Tiffany's blue?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, that makes so much sense, but they would have bought it.
He bought the half auction house once, and I don't think it was a super pleasant experience either, like, for his soul or his pocketbook. So, like, maybe he's good.
Right. Maybe, I think he's good. Like, he would have done it already if that was the move. But speaking of, you know, French auction house owning families, the Pinots made a little bit of an interesting move this week. Did you see that?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it, Nate.
Well, you know, Francois Pinot, the founder of Kering, has long been on the board of Christie's, as he is the owner of Christie's. I think his son, Francois Henri, has basically taken the charge in running it, much like he runs all of Kering, including the recently purchased CAA. But this week, the elder Francois Pinot took himself off of the board and installed in his place his 26-year-old grandson.
Interesting move. Do you know this guy?
I don't think
Louis,
I do.
Louis?
So, like, his dad is Francois Henri. I think he's Francois Louis, or perhaps just Louis Pinot. I'm not sure. Little seems to be known about him. The trades picked up that he works in product something for Kering. I found an Instagram account for a Louis Pinot who works at Valentino, which of course is owned by Kering. I don't know if it's him, but if it is, he seems to be living a pretty fabulous life.
Is this him? Have you matched up the pictures? Okay.
I don't know if it's him.
I'm looking at the Instagram right now, and it's, well, if we don't know it's him, then I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, we're not sure. I mean, there are a few different grandsons, so it could be another one. I mean, clearly this is a Pinot, but it might not be the one on the board. What do we think about this 26-year-old kid on the Christie's board? Is he going to run Christie's? Like, not now, but, like, you know, a few years from now?
I don't know, but I think, like, with all new entrees to the art world, he probably needs to come here, have a sit down on the couch, and introduce himself to us.
I think so. Yeah, I think he has to come on the pod. All right, Francois Louis, whatever your name is. Come on, Nota Bene. You're invited anytime.
I'm speaking of Valentino. They just had a huge, huge announcement. You realize?
Yeah.
The guy from Gucci, Alessandro Michele, is become the creative director. So that's kind
of
interesting.
Let me tell you, that was big news on floor 25 of the World Trade Center.
Did a titter go up? Was that even more so than probably the earthquake that was not felt?
Definitely,
that far?
Definitely more than the earthquake. I mean. From what I know from reading, you know, my colleagues who know way more about fashion than me, this is a great match because Valentino is kind of a blank slate, and Alessandro can come in and sort of do the Gucci thing at Valentino if he wants, like that maximalist sort of neo Galliano kind of, like, you know, 60s hippie thing. I don't know if I was even close.
Not that works, but yeah. With, like, you know, but meets kind of like Middle Ages tapestry.
Yeah, exactly. He could do that, or he could do something completely different. I mean, the guy's clearly a genius, and he really, I mean, like, he, like, you know, brought the profits at Gucci up to like $10 billion. So, like, he could do something similar with Valentino. Who knows? I mean,
I'm so far out of my league. I got nothing to add to this. Although, like, the Game of Thrones at these fashion houses is incredible to watch as an uninformed outsider.
I know. It's just like, it's just so great to be a fashion reporter right now. There's so much shit going down, like business wise. It's really fascinating. Like, of course, like, it's the clothes, I'm told, are, you know, incredibly exciting right now. Sure, I follow that a little bit, but the business side of it is just endlessly fascinating.
I mean, I'm not sure if you caught a couple weeks ago in the style section, the great fashion writer Catherine Horan's interview with Phoebe Philo.
Think it was Vanessa Friedman who did.
Excuse me. Yeah.
But I did read it. It was great. I mean, she's not known for doing much press, Miss Philo.
No, like ever. And like, yeah. My favorite answer was she was talking about what she liked to do for hobbies. One was nightclubbing. And I was like, tell me more. Where do you go out? I want to hear all about it.
Yeah. But, she's sort of gone out on her own. She releases clothes by drops that have nothing to do with the fashion calendar. And by all means, I think they're doing quite well, even though they're really insanely expensive.
They're really cool. I went on the website to see if there's anything for my family. And not quite there yet, price-wise, for me.
Yeah. But yeah, extremely, extremely cool shit. And yeah, she's just a fucking legend. Yeah, she's kind of doing something that's, disrupting the fashion space in some regard, I guess, while we're on fashion, the Bodhi Nike sneakers look really cool. I don't know if you've seen these.
But I've seen them.
They're fucking awesome, man. Come on. Are you kidding me? These look so sick.
They're mentally disabled shoes. I'm sorry. They look like something like some autistic gymnast in Eastern Europe in the 1930s would wear. I just can't get behind them. What kind of pants do you wear those with? I don't know. I wanted to like them. Wanted to like them. I was like, that's so cool. What a collab. And I was like,
I disagree. I disagree. Listen,
the fashion press, this might be I guess maybe you could, maybe the same people that like that guy who makes the suits that are too short. What's his name?
Tom Brown.
Tom Brown. You can wear this maybe with the Tom Brown suit. There's a winner's look.
Speaking of places where you can wear your Bodhi Nikes to, I went to Isodi this week. Have you been to Isodi recently?
Once in the past 6 months.
So you went to the new
the
one?
The new Isodi, yeah.
Oh, it fucking bangs, man. It was really good.
Well, it's incredible. It's an incredible restaurant. The thing is, it doesn't dress itself up, if that makes sense.
Not at all.
Because it's like true Italian cooking in that it feels quite plain. Mm-hmm. It's such a great restaurant. What'd you order?
So, walk in and ran into my favorite currently unemployed friend Will Whitney. Shout out Will, who was just hanging out with his boys, I think his college friends. And they had ordered an array of dishes that we would later get, such as the special incredible oxtail and mushroom pasta that was fucking insane. It was so good. We got the cacio e pepe, which, not my usual order because it's just so basic and I've had it so many times. Great. It was really solid. And then we didn't get the rabbit, which is, an incredible, especially do it porchetta style.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now you're talking my language.
Didn't get that for some reason. It's fine. We didn't get the quail, I think they do, sort of like spatchcock.
So you stood away from the, stayed away from the game. Mm-hmm.
And instead we got this incredible steak, Fiorentina. And we got the Milanese.
Oh, the Milanese I've had is incredible.
Fucking unbelievable. It's instead of it being the thin pounded Milanese, it's a big, juicy pork chop that's breaded, and it's just fucking, it's so good.
It was insane. Very, very good dish. You know who didn't sleep on Isodi? Your boy and mine, Pete Wells, he ranked it in his list of 100 top restaurants. He ranked it 34th. I think it's respectable.
Yeah, yeah,
one,
very
one spot above Danielle, which was coming came in at 35th.
Wow. Yeah, Pistol Pete really came out swinging with this list. Were there any really shocking surprises on this list? I mean, I liked Superiority Burger in the top 10. That was pretty
100%. 100%.
I liked Teresi in the top 10. Very cool.
I mean, Estella in at number 11.
I know.
I that's also a restaurant that I think gets, at least even by me, gets slept on. I don't love the room so much. It feels like a little bit
we've had some good
cozy
tables there, though.
Yeah, yeah, no, certainly. Know. But I thought it was a dope list. I got to try some of these non-hipster restaurants. I want to go up to this spot in the South Bronx that does all the the roast pork.
Oh, the
Le
Charon place?
Yeah. We need to be hitting places like that. I love ABCV at number 14. I've been there twice in the past month or so. He's right. It's really good.
Damn.
I had a dinner a few weeks ago with another Times reporter, not from the culture desks and the wives. And then I went, I had a nice lunch with Jed Mock yesterday.
Great.
There. Wonderful. And it was kind of a popular room. We sat down and the kid from American Fine Art, the catalogs, the art catalogs that has a little gallery
Grant.
Space. Yeah, Grant was there with his bird. And like, it felt like a poppin' room. Great spot for a lunch.
Really cool. That sounds wonderful. I have some lunches to schedule in the next few weeks. Maybe I'll hit the resi there.
I mean, there's a couple restaurants. Like, I think Le Cuckoo is good, but like,
I haven't been since pre-pandemic.
I don't think it's great. There's so many places I want to try. Szechuan Mountain House here at 36, which we went to together.
And Che Lee's on there as well, I think.
Yes. Yeah, both of them.
Those are two of my favorite restaurants in New York. Unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, like, I obviously, like, got the Times alert when I woke up at like 7 in the morning and read this entire thing, obviously.
Yeah, and it's just a great package. Oh, have you ever been to one of these places? These are great. Temple Canteen. It's way out in Flushing. It's a big Hindu temple complex. Ooh. Day there, uh-huh. You know, doing the worshiping and whatnot. And like anyone can go in there. And like I don't know what anything is. Like ordering's a little bit like kind of like I don't know. And it's always incredible, like vegetarian, incredible Indian food. Highly, highly recommend SMP. Yeah, great package. Really, really happy with it. It's such a great city. We're so lucky to live
here. We're so lucky.
We're blessed.
Speaking of fun things that are going on in the city that I have not previously been exposed to, the Antiquarian Book Fair is happening right now at the Park Avenue Armory, and I went yesterday. It's really cool. It's like the primo book fair in the country.
I haven't been in years, but I have been in the past. It's amazing. It's
really amazing. Our friend Harper has a really cool booth, you know, not just art books. He has a really rare first edition of Ulysses as well, but some very, very cool art books, especially from his friend and ours, Richard Prince. Some really special books that Richard, like, personally sort of, like worked up himself. He did some collages in them.
Oh, neat.
It's really like cool. Artworks. Yeah.
What made you decide to roll up there this go around, this iteration?
Well, I have a friend from college, my friend Will Sutherland, who is always been very into rare books of buying and selling them. And he mentioned when I was at dinner with him a few weeks ago that he was planning on going. So when I got the press invite, I was like, you know what? I'm going to take my friend Will. He's going to show me all this shit. And he did. And it was really fun.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. I love that. I love that for you.
Yeah, yeah. And then we went to this cocktail party hosted by our friend Andrew Goldstein at the 59th floor of 500 Fifth Avenue, which is an old Art Deco building. I think it was built right after the Empire State Building. With incredible views. Oh, my God. This is amazing. I mean, right there next to the New York Public Library. Really, really cool shit.
What was Andrew hosting in honor of?
He was hosting with some digital art endeavors. I'm honestly blanking on the name right now, but they're apparently turning this penthouse and a few floors below it into some sort of like clubhouse, private members club or something. I don't know.
Look at Goldstein. Look at him go.
I know.
Because he hasn't announced a new full-time position since leaving the art net, has he?
No, but he's just doing his thing, you know, here and there.
Yeah, great guy. Anything else happened this week? I feel like that kind of covers most of it. I know, you know, everyone's pretty pumped up on this new jam by the Vampire Weekend,
featuring a song entitled "Mary Boone." I have word that Ezra Koenig, over text message. Yeah,
I would love to have been part of that conversation.
I know, yeah, because I think they're trying to get in touch. Annie Armstrong did a nice little item where she called Mary and asked her for her take on the song. She didn't really have a take. I don't think she's a Vampire Weekend fan, per se.
I'm a big Vampire Weekend fan. I saw them play live at maybe the Bowery Ballroom in 2000, I don't know,
I was at that show. I was there. It was like on the day the first album was released, or maybe a little bit afterward. Anyway, they had like a few shows at the Bowery Ballroom, and I was at one of them. David Byrne was there. I remember.
Can we talk about this? I'm pretty pumped for Izzy's shows coming up in Brooklyn at the beginning of next month.
Next month.
I think two shows, the first and second, or 31st and first, something like that.
It's in my calendar. Yes, because she had that great show in Paris that was amazing.
It was incredible.
And it's really exciting that she's bringing it to NYC.
I liked it so much, and I'm such a fan of her music, Nate. I just went like a regular person. I just bought a ticket. Two tickets, I think.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Shit, I even bought a ticket.
Yeah, I don't need anyone to put me on a guest list. It's like a $20 ticket.
Damn, I need to get one. It is on the 30th of April.
Okay.
Tuesday.
Okay, that's right. I think they added a second show.
Oh, did they?
Okay, I think it's cool. Now on the day after that as well. But very, very, very cool. We got a big couple weeks come up. Let's see if we're able to get it together to podcast next week. Wednesday, 11 p.m. flight, lying flat to London Heathrow.
Great.
I was going to go the next day and take the chairman's flight, like a day flight, and then I realized, like, I could spend the day in London looking at art. I have, like, some stuff to install that Friday. Like, might as well maximize my time.
I'll deal with the
discomfort in my middle age of a lack of sleep one night. Because there's our friend Trevor Schmizu has an opening at Stuart Shave, I believe.
Great.
I'm going to have to check this before I publish it, but I'm pretty certain. And it looks like there's an opening at Sadie Cole's, and there's all sorts of good stuff. And then I go right from there to Rome. We'll link up in Rome. Mm-hmm. Blah, 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 blah. Venice, you're all going to be so annoyed with us on our travels. I'm annoyed. My family's annoyed. But so, like, we'll try and get it together maybe just before you go to Chicago, but it might be tough.
Yeah. Is there anything happening in the city this weekend?
Well, you know, tonight I'm breaking my usual embargo, and I'm gonna swing by an art opening for your friend and mine, Paul Sevenier.
Shout out Paul Sevenier.
A show of recent
King of New York.
Yeah, recent paintings at Freight and Volume.
Yeah.
I didn't know they were still open.
Yeah, well, you're gonna be there.
Yeah, I'm gonna be there. I don't think I'll make it to the dinner and the after party, but
the after party obviously is at Paul's Baby Grand.
I presume so, right? I wish it was at Casablanca. But.
Yeah, that's gonna be great. I mean, like, you know, Paul is one of the greats. Tomorrow night there are two openings at the 56 Henry Gallery.
Oh, that's right, Jonah Freeman. And past guest, Al Freeman. Mm-hmm. The Freemans, Nate, you got to be in attendance.
I have to be there.
Did they not have you write the press release for this one?
No, it's funny. I mean, I think we mentioned this on the pod, but, like, me and Al have always had, like, a running joke about, like, doing a Freeman show. But I think because they're two separate shows, Ellie didn't want to, like, confuse people by, like, adding more Freemans to the mix. Like, it's already kind of
because Ellie's always very worried about confusing people.
Right. But because it's two separate shows, it's not a group show, like, I think she's just like, let's just let it just be these two Freemans. We're not going to bring in Nate. We're not going to bring in Lucy or Lady or Marley Freeman. Who are the other Freemans?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, there are others.
I'm just a working guy trying to get through the day. What are you fucking asking me questions for?
Right. But I'll be there for sure. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. There's also an opening at Will Schott's Gallery and a bunch of other galleries down there. I think it'll be great fun, so check it out, listeners, if you hear this before tomorrow.
All right, I'm out of gas. My triple espresso dirty chai latte has worn off. Let's get out of here. Let's go hit the streets, Nate Freeman.
Let's do it.
Nota bene.
Out.